David Bilger. That was wonderful.
Well, thank you very much.
Is it true that this concerto was in the shadows for years and years and then rediscovered?
It was, in fact, lost. After it was premiered, I think Weidinger, the trumpet player who had commissioned it, played it several times, and then there was no mention of it anywhere. And then back in the, I believe it was 1959, it was rediscovered and then recorded and performed. And so we've only got about a half a century of performances of it, which for an old piece is not very much.
And so what's its position in the repertoire?
It's definitely a staple. Obviously, the Haydn Concerto is the one that everybody knows and that's probably performed most often. But Hummel is a close second, although there's not a great history of it being performed here in Philadelphia.
What about it has made it a staple? What's distinctive about it?
Well, partially the language. It was very late classical, very early romantic, depending on what scholar you listen to. It's one or the other. I think of it more as a classical period piece that is looking forward to the romantic. Some of them think of it as an early romantic piece looking back at the classical, but it's in that little niche. He was a friend of Beethoven's. He succeeded Haydn at the court, at the Esterházy's court. So it's right in that period where there's such a rich tradition of music and so little written for the trumpet. And I think that's one of the reasons that the piece is such an important piece in our repertoire.
It's so lyrical.
It is. One of my favorite piano concerti is Mozart 21. And the second movement of it is very similar in language to the second movement of the Hummel Concerto. And I guess it's not a surprise, since Hummel had actually spent a couple of years living with Mozart. They certainly drank the same wine and knew all the same people. So, there are some connections there. But it's a beautiful piece of music. That's one of the things that draws me to it. Plus, the last movement is just so much fun, the rondo.
Is there any particular part of it that is fun or exciting or challenging?
Well, I think it's all fun and it's all challenging in a way. There are a couple of spots in the last movement that are really fast. And I think, any musician, first thing you do when you look at a piece is look for the stuff that's technically most difficult. But for me, it's an opportunity as well as a challenge to sing a song, to tell a story. And there's a lot in there to sing. Obviously in the second movement, but in the first movement it's a little more difficult to bring out how it all fits together, because it's a little bit schizophrenic. There's this trumpet fanfare, okay, it's a trumpet fanfare, the kind of thing that just keeps coming back. But then he mixes that with something more lyrical, and to find the balance between which of the passages is more martial and which is more lyrical and which ones sort of change their mind halfway in between, I think is a great challenge and a great find in the piece.
It must be quite a different experience for you to be standing up in front versus your usual position in the orchestra. And I'm thinking not only because the spotlight is on you, but because you hear things. Do you hear things differently at different parts of the stage?
That's an astute question, actually. It's very different, partially because of who you sit next to. Traditionally, the brass are in the back of the stage, and we sit with other brass players, and right in front of us usually are the bassoons and clarinets. And behind us are percussion. So it's more of those single one-on-a-part instruments that have a very distinctive sonority, a distinctive sound. Standing up in the front, you get... I'm surrounded by virtuoso string players, and they have their own way of playing together, and in the back we breathe together. They breathe, but in a different way. So it's always, for me, a learning experience to be up there in the front. And the hard part is not being able to make eye contact with all of my friends in the strings, because in rehearsal it was a lot of turning sideways or turning around and playing off of each other. And then in the concert, of course, it's a little rude to put your back to the audience unless the people are sitting in the choral seats.
Would you like to play anything?
I'll get on my horn. I'll play something for you. When you had asked about what the challenges are. There's a spot in the last movement that is written with a very simple rhythm. But he writes a turn, an ornament in. So all of a sudden, what looks very simple on the page becomes much more complex. And that's one of those spots that requires a good deal of practice. And it actually is the facility of that passage is how I set the tempo for the last movement. The last movement I get to start by myself, which is, you know, really a really good thing. I get to, I don't have to respond to what a conductor's doing. They have to follow me because it's just me. But before I'm starting that movement, I'm not thinking so much of the opening theme, but I'm thinking about that passage and then setting the tempo off of that.